guys, how good is this?
I'm in a 46-year-old MG car, and speaking of things on wheels, recently we did a very special Legends with Bevo with the great Phil Liggett, the cycling broadcaster, done over 50 Tour de France's. It's a very special Legends with Bevo with Serafina from Cycle with Serafina. I hope you enjoy it. So catch you later on, I'm off for a drive.
With Bevo at the Hilton during the Tour Down Under 2024, because we are going to go and introduce a cycling legend, and I've asked Bevo to come and interview him with me because I love how Bevo interviews sports and cycling legends.
Oh, thanks Serafina. I'm super excited to be here, and I've met Phil about this time last year, and one of the nicest blokes, and obviously done so much for the sport of cycling, so yeah, really excited to chat with him again. Yeah. And of course be a part of your amazing podcast, Cycle with Serafina.
Let's do it. Oh, and there's steps. It's got all the winners on it.
Hey everybody. He has shaped, informed and inspired cycling through generations. He has covered 53 Tour de France's, and this year will be the 17th Olympic Games in Paris. He is the voice of cycling. He is legendary Phil Liggett. Yay!
Hi, Phil. Hi, Serafina, lovely to see you.
Thank you for being on my show, Cycle with Serafina. It's wonderful to meet you. Yeah, and I'm going to throw over now to Bevo, because he's got some questions he wants to ask you, and I will ask along the way. Because you know Bevo, you've met him.
I've met you before, Bevo. Nice to see you again, by the way.
Great to see you again as well.
Yeah, in Australia.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, in person. Obviously, last time I think we had the Legends Bevo a couple of years ago, it was on Zoom.
We did, and I got lots of comments on what we did too.
Oh, that's great. I did. Thank you. Everyone loves hearing, obviously, like Serafina mentioned, your journey is amazing and your stories. Yeah. And we'll speak a little bit later on about the excellent stuff that yourself and Trisha do with animal conservation. Mm. But obviously, we're here for the Tour Down Under. Such a great event, not only in Australia, but in Adelaide. And we spoke a couple of weeks ago, myself and Serafina, about how amazing it is for tourism in South Australia. And I guess in terms of yourself being involved with the Tour Down Under since it started, what do you think makes it so special for you?
Well, when they first planned it, when they lost the Formula One in Adelaide, you know, then they asked the public, what would you like to see that would replace the Formula One? Because everybody thought this was such a great thing for Adelaide, and it certainly was. And the majority of the public said, let's have a bicycle race like the Tour de France. Which was a bit of a shock. And then Mike Turter, who was a track specialist and had won a gold medal in the Los Angeles Olympics, was charged with looking into it with more detail. And Mike came to me and they came up with this plan. And it was easy. It was a no-brainer to call it the Tour Down Under. That's what it was. And the biggest worry was, how do you bring the best cyclists in the world in January when they're all freezing cold around Europe? And I'm thinking more of skiing, to ride at the highest level in January in a very hot time of the year. And that was the biggest fear. But anyway, they did it the right way. They researched it. They came to me as well, because I used to organise the Tour of Great Britain for 22 years. And so Mike wanted to know what happened. The South Australian Tourism got involved. The South Australian Government got involved. John Olson was the Premier at the time. He backed it in full. And the police service backed it in full. They took the police service to the Tour de France and said, this is how you handle an escort, a bike race on a public highway, on the closed roads. Nothing was a problem, because I actually had never been to South Australia till this was happening. And I love this place. South Australia is South Australia. It's not part of anywhere else. It's South Australia. And they do things great. And what's more, everybody pulls in the same direction. They produced the Tour Down Under. They flew me out the year before. I flew in, because I'll never forget it, because they landed my helicopter on the famous oval. The groundsman wasn't too chuffed when the chopper came down in the square. But anyway. And then 10 took off and flew. Channel 10 was doing the first year and flew me around all the courses in 98 to show me from the air, Kangaroo Gorge and all these lovely places like Cuddly Creek. And I was just, I just loved what I saw. So I said to Mike, Mike, this is unbelievable. And your support from the people, from the government, from the police, is unbelievable. So Mike is very much a South Australian, very proud of being here. Spent his hundreds of cycling hours riding into the Adelaide Hills in his preparation for the Olympics and stuff. And so I said, well, I can't see anything wrong with it. I said, let's go. And so the next year was the first Tour Down Under. Then where we started right here, we're in the Hilton Hotel here. The Tour Down Under brought innovations to the race, like let the public see how the mechanics prepare the bike. So they put a big tent up in the square. All the mechanics had their little separate rooms, and the public were allowed in to sit on the barriers and watch the mechanics at work, building the wheels, getting the bikes clean, and that was night and day. Then they created the Tour Village with a difference. It could not fail. And I remember John Olsen on day one, we were over on the terraces here for the start. We were coming back at the end of the week to the same area, same course. And I remember John Olsen saying, look, when he saw the thousands of people, he said, I told you we should have built another grandstand built before next week when they come back. Another suit, we can put 10,000 more people in, and he got his wish, because there were thousands of people watching the race, and they proved what they asked for, they got, but of course for the town, they brought it for the town, for the state, everybody travelled interstate, word spread around the world, it's a great time of year, the sun's out, hey, let's all go to Australia, and in particular South Australia, and so the race has never looked back. I've had a wonderful time here, I've done every one. Obviously, during COVID, there was two that became a national event rather than international. But apart from those, I've been here, and next year will be the 25th edition. Where did the years go? All the most famous cyclists in the world have been here, and every one of them, I don't know anybody without exception, who have said, hey, I'm not going down there again, because Turta's biggest fear was the weather will be too hot. I'm sure they're going to see the mountain gorilla, so I might be a gorilla. I tell you why, because the guy who's won the most stages in this race in the Tour Down Under is Andre Greipel, just retired now. He's a big guy, and he's won, I think it's 14 stages of this race, and he's way clear of the record. Robin McEwen in second with 12. So it must be 18. Anyway, isn't it? So Andre, it was Australia that nicknamed him the gorilla, because of the way he rips out. He's such a big sprinter, and he would come out and he'd snap his stage wins. And he was just a very nice guy when you spoke to him, very introverted, quiet, but he was big. And so, yeah, so I think that's one of my big memories, calling Andre the Gorilla. And now, of course, all those years on, he's retired, and we're off to see the gorillas in Uganda.
Actually, I was thinking when you were talking before about what you're doing in South Africa and another way for people to make money. Maybe you need to introduce a Tour de South Africa. It's like cycling to South Africa.
I did a tour then.
Yeah.
And Trish, because she's a physio, she worked on the Australian team in this race, which had Robbie McEwen, actually, who's now my co-commentator here at the Tour Down Under, because he's resigned. But and sadly, the racing is not very popular amongst the people in South Africa, which is a shame, because there's been some great racing, and of course the country is beautiful.
Yeah, it'll be amazing.
Yeah, and the big, they have long passes there. You know, people think South Africa's flat. You get up towards the Drakensberg Mountains, which they call the High Velds, and the Long Tong Pass. Some beautiful passes, and the scenery. Yeah.
Yeah, and then being able to see the animals. You know, having the overhead views through the
amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When I've been there, and I've been with a lot of top South African cyclists, Australian cyclists, and when they finish the race there, nice people who own aeroplanes have always offered to fly us to see things. You know, I remember we took Henk Vogels and a few of the Damien McDonald, who sadly was killed a few years back in Melbourne. We took them into the bush. I remember one guy started creeping around. We were about to have a braai. What word I mean? Barbie, because I'm in Australia now. It's a braai in South Africa. I'm having a Barbie. And the guy owned the lodge, and he landed his aeroplane on the grass airfield just down the road. He always leaves his vehicle at the end of the airfield, tucked in the trees. Anybody could have it, but where are they going to go in it? And the key's in the ignition. We landed his reasonably big aircraft, a 14-seater aircraft, and he was trying to stop the aeroplane. as it ran down the runway, because the Impala were all over it, and it was dark, and it was trying. The sweat was coming down his face. Anyway, that was okay. Then we parked on the airplane, got out of the airplane, jumped in his vehicle, and as we're leaving, he's shining the lights, and there's a line right there with his big eye, her big eyes, looking straight at you. And she could have launched onto our legs, but they did not like that, really. But they kept an eye on us. Then when we got back to for the first time, he told the boys, they were big cyclists. He told the boys, they just be careful, he says, for snakes, but just put some wood on the braai and get the fire going. Yeah, you know, the Aussies are like, okay. So throwing the wood on, they're all making so much noise. We're in the bush, you don't make noise in the bush. Anyway, he got the fire going, and of course, out came the snake. Because the fire started burning up, it was a black mamba, most poisonous snake in the world.
Oh, goodness.
That's in public view, really. And the guy's name was Mike. And Mike, I saw him leave that seat, and in one flowing motion, grabbed the tail of the snake and kept going, and just threw the snake into the bush. Because he won't kill a fly. No matter what the snake might do to him, he wouldn't kill it. So he just threw it away. And on the same evening, one of the guys started to circumnavigate. He spotted a lion watching us have a hot barbie. And this silly bugger started going around the back. And Mike said, "What are you doing?" I said, "This isn't the zoo, you know. That guy'll kill you." And he was trying to get round to get a photo of the lion watching us having the barbie. So he came back with his tail between the legs. Because they're not going to charge us if we're sitting around the barbie making noise, but they'll watch you. And they, you know, they're assessing.
Yeah.
Oh, we've had some great experiences.
I just wanted to ask you as well. A lot of people remember a couple of years ago you had quite a serious boat accident.
Mm.
Just remind everyone what happened and how you're going after that as well.
Yeah, well, I like to come over a little bit early when I come for the Tour Down Under, because over the years we've done the Bay Classic Series, which are over around Port Phillip Bay or in Geelong, as they were on this occasion. And then over the years too, Jerry Ryan, the entrepreneur who has the Australian cycling team, he realised his ambition to put an Australian cycling team in the Tour de France, which he achieved. Jerry will be the first to tell you he's not short of a few bob, but he loves the sport of cycling, he's been very generous to the riders from Australia with assistance and help as well. So we made good friends, and we were staying at Jerry's hotel at the Mitchelton Wine Estate, which is in Ngambie, outside of Melbourne itself, and it's on the Goulburn River. Jerry had flown off to Hawaii with his family to celebrate his son's 40th birthday. So John Tavoro, the finest cyclist in Australia, and John, who was an Olympian and Commonwealth Games rider and stuff, he was charged with steering the boat. Now, it's a lovely boat, and it's a very gentle cruise down the Golden River, but it had been in flood. It was now officially okay, but it had been in flood less than a few days earlier. And we're coming back, and a water ski had gone by and soaked us. And so I just had shorts on, I took my shirt off, and held it off the back like this to try and dry it before we got back, because the boat was bound for the jetty of the hotel we were staying. But then, no warning at all, there was a big tree trunk that had got waterlogged, but only just to dip below the surface, and we didn't see it. John and the nose of the boat went over it, but the propeller took the trunk. And I just remember seeing the outboard motor come straight on the water, and the boat go from 15 knots to zero. And I went from zero to 15 knots, and I went straight down the boat, and I was flying. I flew past Trish about a metre off the ground, parallel, and slammed into the furniture with my back. It would have been my head, I was dead, but it was my back. And I broke four ribs. I've got to speak, you know, I've got to breathe. And so I, John thought I was just being a, as he put it, a moaning old man from Britain, you know, a moaning old pie. And then when I told him a few days later I'd broken four ribs, he said, "Oh, mate, you're not moaning old pom at all, are you?" I said, "No, it's pretty painful. But anyway, I didn't, because I was doing the TV here, and I did a little job up there first, and then went for a ride with John, and we stayed at Jerry's lovely hotel. I didn't want the press to find out about the accident, because the television network I'm working for were here, and I couldn't get to them. And so I thought, this hits the press. We've got no commentator for the Tour Down Under. So I made everybody say nothing, you must not get it. I did. And of course, also the airline would not have let me flow on if I had told them I had four broken ribs, which I didn't know at the time anyway. I hadn't been to any doctors, or anybody alerted. So I stayed another couple of days up there, and Trish, being a physio, she kept on checking me out and said, I don't think there's any broken ribs, you're fine. So, but the pain wasn't, of course. And then I landed here. And the first thing I did, I called the race doctor. Over the years, I made friends with him up on the Tour Down Under. Told him what I'd done. He says, you know, you better check out. He said, just across the window there, there's 200 metres to the best hotel here. And it's obviously private. And so I went over there. He made the appointment. And he was in Sydney. He hadn't come here yet. And he made the appointment. I walked over, went in. We all had to wear masks in those days. And I remember everybody's walking past saying, hi Phil, how you doing? And the receptionist kept looking at me and said, who are you? And I said, well, no, I guess you don't ride a bike or watch television. She goes, no. I said, well, that's why you don't know. Anyway, all the surgeons were popping by and all saying the same. And there were very strict code problem with the masks. But they took me back into the room. I'd had the x-ray now. Took me back into the room. And they said, great, we can take our masks off now, Phil. We all want a photo with you. I said, guys, I'd like to know what my photo's done, because the one you just took out there. Oh, don't worry about that. They said, you've done a good job, four broken ribs. And they showed me the little white marks on every rib, which I had broken. But I was okay, and I was able to come to the producer who was in this hotel and say, hey, Mike, I can come clean now. I've had a bit of an accident, but I'm fine. See, I'm fine. And so I got away with it. The next day, the word got out, and it said, Phil turns from biking to flying. other than that, I don't do anything. I remember that Adrian Metcalfe's a great British athlete. I met him at the 1980 Moscow Olympics when he was just coming over to being a TV commentator. And we always coincided for dinner at night in the hotel. Now, this is Moscow, and this was supposed to be the big breakthrough. The Games had finally gone into a country which is still part of the Iron Curtain, really. Didn't quite work out the way they expected, but we were in a big 5,000-bed hotel. Only one way we were allowed to leave, only one way we were allowed to enter. You couldn't see the rest of the hotel. That was the way it was. And so we always finished up, myself and Adrian. He did athletics, I did the cycling. But we always seemed to get dinner at 11 o'clock at night, so we always sat together and we were talking, and that was basically he said the amazing thing about your voice and your commentary is you can go as high as you like with your levels of pitch and your voice doesn't crack, because if you many commentators start screaming, that's what it sounds like, they're screaming. I'm so lucky. I didn't know I did it. He just said that's the most amazing thing.
Can you do it now? Can you go see it?
Well, I can try. I mean, not too well. Now, look at that man coming down the street now. He's putting one leg in front. I don't believe this. This is unbelievable. He's crossed the road. Now he's out of sight. Do you know what? I do it in cars. People pick me up at the airport and I'll just say to the driver, look at this guy going across the road now. What a stupid place to cross. He's not going to make this. And he started to accelerate. And the guy says, do you know, you just started commentating. I said, oh, sorry. I do.
That's your thing, yeah.
I've had it many times. Bit of a I just see things, and that's it. I interpret them.
Yep.
And I'm very pleased with it. But I do not know what I'm going to say before I start work. You know, most guys, I mean, I see the journalists who are working on the comedy, they're writing their opening lines, so they make sure they say the obvious things, like, good afternoon, good morning, welcome to, where are we? Put that in and mention the weather and my stay and all that. I don't do any, I just hope it comes out in the right order. But I remember this little production assistant come up to me when I was working with CBS, and she goes, excuse me, Mr. Ligger, said, yeah, can we just have the words you're going to say when you open the show so we know when to go cue? I said, well, I've no idea actually, so but it'll be something like hello and welcome. Okay. Then I heard the producer in my earpiece, and obviously to her microphone, her little handset, saying, just leave him alone. He's a Brit. He'll be okay. She said, fine, and left. Yeah. But we've had some laughs in that situation. And when I trained Paul Sherwin to be a commentator, he was a great cyclist, and we gelled as personal friend over. We did 33 tours. I mean, that's a record by any St. People duo in the world in any sport. Longest running kind of duo, and he said comedy duo because that's what it was. But Paul used to shake a bit. He used to get quite nervous, very tense. But I used to calm him down. I said, don't worry. And as I was once told, when I was doing my very first commentary live, and the phone went by the telephone, and it was a guy who was a very famous guy, who was the host back in the studio, a guy called Dickie Davies. And the phone went, and he goes, hello, old son, Dickie here. Oh, God, Dickie's talking to me. And this is my very first day of commentating. It was a 45-minute live show. So he said, listen, he said, I'll give you a big build-up. We're just coming back from the wrestling into commercial, and then we're coming to you. And he said, I'll give you a big build-up. And he said, all you've got to do is remember why you got the job. I said, Dickie, I don't know why I got the job. He says, because they liked you. Now, don't change when you start talking. Don't start getting posh. They like your character, your personality. Don't change it. And that's the only word of advice I got in commentary. And it's the only word of advice I gave Paul Sherwin 30 years later. Don't change, because they like what they see.
Phil, if people want to get involved with the... sorry, just going back to the poaching, and we'll just finish up soon as well. But if people want to get involved in that, can they? And supporting in any way?
They can. I mean, we've done a... we love helping people and animals. Africa was... because we went to live there for a while, as we 3 months a year now. We have two entries. One is we help a game reserve called Kareka in the Eastern Cape, and kareega.com. It's a game reserve, Kareka game reserve. Just check out the website. It's all there. That's in just south of the KZN, KwaZulu Natal, where they are. They've lost over 400 rhino recently in the bad figures. And that's spitting a kick from where Kareka is, and Kareka haven't lost any because we've worked very hard with them. And people are unbelievably generous. I was in tears last time in Trish, we can only take 16 people at a time because they're beautiful, really posh lodges. We arrange a prize for them with a written in a donation. And then it's a lady called Lundy, who's the founder of the foundation, CEO, and the lodges are franchised, so we have to pay the lodges direct. But the boys and the rangers allow us, with Lindy's permission, and it's the only time it can happen, is to ride mountain bikes. And so we've bought 16 mountain bikes, which is part of, now every time people come to get the mountain bikes in their feet. And you ride out in the wild, in the bush, amongst the animals. Okay, the guys are armed back and front, but we've never had an incident. We even rode past a rhino. And they have a car guard way out front to a radio back if they say a buffalo hanging out, because buffaloes are quite dangerous. And that's the Americans who came, and basically all through cycling, people have met from big companies through cycling. And at the end of the trip, we had the local people gave us a traditional dance, and they were wonderful. They got Trish up there with a grass skirt on that weighed more than she did, and they danced. And we just enjoyed the company. They loved us. And then the boys, which was multinational, but mostly Americans and Swiss and German. Our spokesman, Rolf, stood up and he took over the speech for me, and he just said, we've had a chat, and we've decided to have a collection. No, they know about the fact that they don't have to spend a penny. It's written into what they pay. And he said, we've decided, and they said, nobody was pressured. A I found it afterwards, they each gave, the lowest donation was 1,000 US, and the big donor gave 20,000 US. And then he announced, so for you, Lindy, he said, the CEO, I'm delighted to give you this 2 million South African rand. Now, Lindy is never lost for words. She started crying, I started crying, and we couldn't speak, because it was an incredible gesture. And it cost 2 million rand, about 200,000 US dollars. It's an enormous amount of money. Then Lindy just had always been clean and open with where the money goes. And so she, in a newsletter which is now being produced, they pulled down all these fences on the Bushman's River, because she's got a vast plan of how all this land will be returned to the wild. And she's also the largest, the biggest employer of the people. So they'll all get benefit from it. And the local school, we had to go and see the kids at local school. I wasn't too good at the netball. But I couldn't even play 90 minutes of football. They were going to kill me. But they're great people, and they need help. So it's an example of how they understand if we protect our animals, they'll also benefit. And that's the only way the animals will survive in Africa. It's the only way.